Chapter 15. Character of him, as a man of honor and of virtue, as well as of great estate. And indeed I had a great deal of reason to say so of him too. For though we lodged both on a floor, and he had frequently come into my chamber, even when I was in bed, and I also into his, when he was in bed, yet he never offered anything to me further than a kiss, or so much as solicited me to anything till long after, as you shall hear. I frequently took notice to my landlady of his exceeding modesty, and she again used to tell me, she believed it was so from the beginning. However, she used to tell me that she thought I ought to expect some gratification from him for my company, for indeed he did, as it were, engross me, and I was seldom from him. I told her I had not given him the least occasion to think I wanted it, or that I would accept of it from him. She told me she would take that part upon her, and she did so, and managed it so dexterously, that the first time we were together alone, after she had talked with him, he began to inquire a little into my circumstances, as how I had subsisted myself, since I came on shore, and whether I did not want money. I stood off very boldly. I told him that, though my cargo of tobacco was damaged, yet that it was not quite lost. That the merchant I had been consigned to had so honestly managed for me that I had not wanted, and that I hoped, with frugal management, I should make it hold out till more would come, which I expected by the next fleet, that in the meantime I had retrenched my expenses, and whereas I kept a maid last season, now I lived without. And whereas I had a chamber, and a dining room then on the first floor, as he knew, I now had but one room, two pair of stairs, and the like. But I live, said I, as well satisfied now as I did then, adding, that his company had been a means to make me live much more cheerfully than otherwise I should have done, for which I was much obliged to him, and so I put off all room for any offer for the present. However, it was not long before he attacked me again, and told me he found that I was backward to trust him with the secret of my circumstances, which he was sorry for, assuring me that he inquired into it with no design to satisfy his own curiosity, but merely to assist me if there was any occasion. But since I would not own myself to stand in need of any assistance, he had but one thing more to desire of me, and that was, that I would promise him that, when I was any way straitened, or like to be so, I would frankly tell him of it, and that I would make use of him with the same freedom that he made the offer, adding, that I should always find I had a true friend, though perhaps I was afraid to trust him. I omitted nothing that was fit to be said by one infinitely obliged to let him know that I had a due sense of his kindness. And indeed from that time I did not appear so much reserved to him as I had done before, though still within the bounds of the strictest virtue on both sides. But how free soever our conversation was, I could not arrive to that sort of freedom which he desired, viz. To tell him I wanted money, though I was secretly very glad of his offer. Some weeks passed after this, and still I never asked him for money, when my landlady, a cunning creature, who had often pressed me to it, but found that I could not do it, makes a story of her own inventing, and comes in bluntly to me when we were together. Oh, widow! Says she, I have bad news to tell you this morning. What is that? Said I, are the Virginia ships taken by the French? For, that was my fear. No, no, says she, but the man you sent to Bristol yesterday for money is come back, and says he has brought none. Now I could by no means like her project, I though it looked too much like prompting him, which indeed he did not want, and I clearly saw that I should lose nothing by being backward to ask, so I took her up short. I can't image why he should say so to you, said I, for I assure you he brought me all the money I sent him for, and here it is, said I, pulling out my purse with about 12 guineas in it, and added, I intend you shall have most of it by and by. He seemed distasted a little at her talking as she did at first, as well as I, taking it, as I fancied he would, as something forward of her. But when he saw me give such an answer, he came immediately to himself again. The next morning we talked of it again, when I found he was fully satisfied, and, smiling, said he hoped I would not want money, and not tell him of it, and that I had promised him otherwise. I told him I had been very much dissatisfied at my landlady's talking so publicly the day before of what she had nothing to do with, but I supposed she wanted what I owed her, which was about 8 guineas, which I had resolved to give her, and had accordingly given it her the same night she talked so foolishly. He was in a mighty good humor when he heard me say I had paid her, and it went off into some other discourse at that time. But the next morning, he having heard me up about my room before him, he called to me, and I answering, he asked me to come into his chamber. He was in bed when I came in, and he made me come and sit down on his bedside, for he said he had something to say to me which was of some moment. After some very kind expressions, he asked me if I would be very honest to him, and give a sincere answer to one thing he would desire of me. After some little cavil at the word sincere, apostrophe and asking him if I had ever given him any answers which were not sincere, I promised him I would. Why, then, his request was, he said, to let him see my purse. I immediately put my hand into my pocket, and, laughing to him, pulled it out, and there was in it 3 guineas and a half. Then he asked me if there was all the money I had. I told him no, laughing again, not by a great deal. Well, then, he said, he would have me promise to go and fetch him all the money I had, every farthing. I told him I would, and I went into my chamber, and fetched him a little private drawer, where I had about 6 guineas more, and some silver, and threw it all down upon the bed, and told him there was all my wealth, honestly to a shilling. He looked a little at it, but did not tell it, and huddled it all into the drawer again, and then reaching his pocket, pulled out a key, and bade me open a little walnut tree box he had upon the table, and bring him such a drawer, which I did. In which drawer there was a great deal of money in gold, I believe near 200 guineas, but I knew not how much. He took the drawer, and taking my hand, made me put it in and take a whole handful. I was backward at that, but he held my hand hard in his hand, and put it into the drawer, and made me take out as many guineas almost as I could well take up at once. When I had done so, he made me put them into my lap, and took my little drawer, and poured out all my money among his, and bade me get me gone, and carry it all home into my own chamber. I relate this story the more particularly because of the good humor there was in it, and to show the temper with which we conversed. It was not long after this, but he began every day to find fault with my clothes, with my laces and headdresses, and, in a word, pressed me to buy better, which, by the way, I was willing enough to do, though I did not seem to be so, for I loved nothing in the world better than fine clothes. I told him I must housewife the money he had lent me, or else I should not be able to pay him again. He then told me, in a few words, that as he had a sincere respect for me, and knew my circumstances, he had not lent me that money, but given it me, and that he thought I had merited it from him, by giving him my company so entirely as I had done. After this he made me take a maid, and keep house, and his friend, that come with him to Bath being gone, he obliged me to diet him, which I did very willingly, believing, as it appeared, that I should lose nothing by it, nor did the woman of the house fail to find her account in it too. We had lived thus near 3 months, when the company beginning to wear away at the Bath, he talked of going away, and fain he would have me to go to London with him. I was not very easy in that proposal, not knowing what posture I was to live in there, or how he might use me. But while this was in debate he fell very sick. He had gone out to a place in Somersetshire, called Shepton, where he had some business, and was there taken very ill, and so ill, that he could not travel, so he sent his man back to Bath, to beg me that I would hire a coach, and come over to him. Before he went, he had left all his money and other things of value with me, and what to do with them, I did not know, but I secured them as well as I could, and locked up the lodgings, and went to him, where I found him very ill indeed. However, I persuaded him to be carried in a litter to the bath, where there was more help and better advice to be had. He consented, and I brought him to the bath, which was about 15 miles, as I remember. Here he continued very ill of a fever, and kept his bed 5 weeks, all which time I nursed him, and tended him myself, as much and as carefully as if I had been his wife. Indeed, if I had been his wife I could not have done more. I sat up with him, so much and so often, that at last, indeed, he would not let me sit up any longer, and then I got a pallet bed into his room, and lay in it just at his bed's feet. I was indeed sensibly affected with his condition, and with the apprehension of losing such a friend as he was, and was like to be to me, and I used to sit and cry by him many hours together. However, at last he grew better, and gave hopes that he would recover, as indeed he did, though very slowly. Were it otherwise than what I am going to say, I should not be backward to disclose it, as it is apparent I have done in other cases in this account, but I affirm that through all this conversation, abating the freedom of coming into the chamber when I, or he was in bed, and abating the necessary offices of attending him night and day when he was sick, there had not passed the least immodest word or action between us. Oh, that it had been so to the last! After some time he gathered strength, and grew well apace, and I would have removed my pallet bed, but he would not let me, till he was able to venture himself without anybody to sit up with him, and then I removed to my own chamber. He took many occasions to express his sense of my tenderness and concern for him, and when he grew quite well, he made me a present of 50 guineas for my care, and, as he called it, for hazarding my life to save his. And now he made deep protestations of a sincere inviolable affection for me, but all along attested it to be with the utmost reserve for my virtue and his own. I told him I was fully satisfied of it. He carried it at length, that he protested to me, that if he was naked in bed with me, he would as sacredly preserve my virtue as he would defend it, if I was assaulted by a ravisher. I believed him, and told him I did so. But this did not satisfy him. He would, he said, wait for some opportunity to give me an undoubted testimony of it. It was a great while after this that I had occasion, on my own business, to go to Bristol, upon which he hired me a coach, and would go with me, and did so, and now indeed our intimacy increased. From Bristol he carried me to Gloucester, which was merely a journey of pleasure, to take the air. And here it was our hap to have no lodging in the inn, but in one large chamber with 2 beds in it. The master of the house going up with us to show his rooms, and coming into that room, said very frankly to him, "Sir, it is none of my business to inquire whether the lady be your spouse or no, but if not, you may lie as honestly in these 2 beds, as if you were in 2 chambers, apostrophe and with that he pulls a great curtain which drew quite across the room and effectually divided the beds. "Well, apostrophe," says my friend, "very readily, these beds will do, and as for the rest, we are too near akin to lie together, though we may lodge near one another," and this put an honest face on the thing too. When we came to go to bed, he decently went out of the room till I was in bed, and then went to bed in the bed on his own side of the room, but lay there talking to me a great while. At last, repeating his usual saying, that he could lie naked in the bed with me, and not offer me the least injury, he starts out of his bed. "And now, my dear," apostrophe says he, "you shall see how just I will be to you, and that I can keep my word," apostrophe, and away he comes to my bed. I resisted a little, but I must confess I should not have resisted him much, if he had not made those promises at all. So after a little struggle, as I said, I lay still, and let him come to bed. When he was there, he took me in his arms, and so I lay all night with him. But he had no more to do with me, or offered anything to me, other than embracing me, as I say, in his arms. No, not the whole night, but rose up, and dressed him in the morning, and left me as innocent for him as I was the day I was born. This was a surprising thing to me, and perhaps may be so to others, who know how the laws of nature work. For he was a strong, vigorous, brisk person, nor did he act thus on a principle of religion at all, but of mere affection, insisting on it, that though I was to him the most agreeable woman in the world, yet, because he loved me, he could not injure me. I own it was a noble principle, but as it was what I never understood before, so it was to me perfectly amazing. We traveled the rest of the journey as we did before, and came back to the bath, where, as he had opportunity to come to me when he would, he often repeated the moderation, and I frequently lay with him, and he with me, and although all the familiarities between man and wife were common to us, yet he never once offered to go any farther, and he valued himself much upon it. I do not say that I was so wholly pleased with it as he thought I was, for I own much wickeder than he, as you shall hear presently. We lived thus near 2 years, only with this exception, that he went 3 times to London in that time, and once he continued there 4 months. But, to do him justice, he always supplied me with money, to subsist me very handsomely. Had we continued thus, I confess we had had much to boast of. But as wise men say, it is ill venturing too near the brink of a command, so we found it. And here again I must do him the justice to own, that the first breach was not on his part. It was one night, that we were in bed together warm and merry, and having drunk, I think, a little more wine that night, both of us, than usual, although not in the least, to disorder either of us, when, after some other follies which I cannot name, and being clasped close in his arms, I told him I repeated with shame and horror of soul that I could find in my heart to discharge him of his engagement for one night and no more. He took me at my word immediately, and after that there was no resisting him, neither indeed had I any mind to resist him any more, let what would come of it. Thus the government of our virtue was broken, and I exchanged the place of friend for that unmusical, harsh-sounding title of whore. In the morning we were both at our penitentials. I cried very heartily, he expressed himself very sorry, but that was all either of us could do at that time, and the way being thus cleared, and the bars of virtue and conscience thus removed, we had the less difficult afterwards to struggle with. It was but a dull kind of conversation that we had together for all the rest of that week. I looked on him with blushes, and every now and then started that melancholy objection, what if I should be with child now? What will become of me then? Apostrophe he encouraged me by telling me that as long as I was true to him, he would be so to me. And since it was gone such a length, which indeed he never intended, yet if I was with child, he would take care of that, and of me too. This hardened us both. Gutenberg edition. End of chapter.